Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I am chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market blog, which I will link below this interview. Mark, let's recap the economic data this week that did cause some volatility in a wide range of sectors, pretty much dealing with inflation data. And it's all about how you compare that inflation data to year-over-year changes, but then also looking at the trend that inflation has been on just in the near term. Look, inflation data is coming in broadly higher than we have seen in the last decade, but you can also make the argument that it has come down from those really elevated levels just a few months ago. Again, it all depends on how you filter the data and your time frame that you're looking at. But Mark, take us through some of the inflation data we saw this week and your overall thought of where inflation is going and where it might settle out.
Sure. So as you know, we saw the we saw both U.S. inflation gauges, the CPI and the PPI. And maybe we begin with the CPI. So what's concerning a lot of people is the year-over-year rate. That was up a little bit more than expected at 5.4%. For the last 4 months, the headline CPI has been 5.3 to 5.4%, stable, though at elevated levels. And the other thing that people look at is, of course, we see the monthly number. And the monthly number is was relatively elevated as well at 0.4. So what I do is try to, so it's important partly to think about the officials' reaction function. How are they going to see this number, and what does this do for policy? And so get into the Fed thinking, if I was setting policy, I'd be interested in sort of the pace of it. How fast is it going? Is it accelerating? And the year-over-year rate might not be the best way to see if it's accelerating the last 3 or 4 months or something like that. So what I did was I took Q3, because we did have the September inflation, so I took the Q3 monthly numbers and I annualized them. It comes in at a little bit less than 5%. That's elevated for sure. But what strikes me is I did the same exercise for the second quarter. In the second quarter, inflation, US CPI, rose at an annualized rate of almost 9.5%. Right? Again, we take the monthly numbers, we annualize them, and Q2, almost 9.5%, Q3, a little less than 5%. This I think, just a reinforce the conviction that some Fed officials still have that the bulk of the price increases are transitory. That is, they're related somehow to the pandemic and the reopening and the supply shocks. And, you know, we're seeing a rent increase. But I know last spring and summer, rents in the major urban centers fell sharply. So that they go up now is still, I think, related to the reopening, even though it might be, some people might disagree and see it's other factors. I did the same thing with the core rate, just to run through those numbers too for you. In Q3, annualized pace, 2.5%. In Q2, it was a little bit, say around 10%. So again, we're seeing the deceleration as things open up and things stabilize. So to me, that's the real important takeaway, is that yes, inflation is high, but no, the jury still has to be out how transitory it is and what that means. My best guess right now is that inflation will subside early next year, even though it might still be more elevated, that is, above the Fed's 2% average rate.
So, Mark, what about the inputs that are coming into this inflation data? Because we keep on hearing, and rightfully so, look, the job market, it's hard for employers to find workers, and the argument is they're going to need to pay them more. So wage increases. We're also seeing energy prices continue to move higher. Oil over $80 a barrel at a 7-year high. Base metals, those took off again this week. General goods prices, those seem to be moving higher. Don't these factors, these inputs, seem to point to higher inflation? And who knows, inflation that could even get higher, depending, I think, mostly on the jobs market and energy prices.
Yeah, you raise a good point. I think it's like a lot of people have this concern of thinking about rising, you know, all these companies reporting higher wages, higher wage demand, and there's a lot of industrial action that strikes in the U.S. right now over wages. But I think from, again, try to think again from like a, either like a serious economist or even say a Fed policymaker, what are they going to be looking at? And there's this concept called unit labor costs. And what that measures is not just wages, but includes benefits and productivity. And the ironic thing is in the first half of the year, so we don't have Q3 data yet, but in the first half of the year, unit labor costs in the U.S. actually fell. That is to say, how does that happen? If we know wages are going up, the cost of benefits, like healthcare, is going up. So how can unit labor costs go down? Because it's offset, those wage increases, labor cost increases, offset with productivity improvements. I mean, look at what's been happening. You know, we've had a good run in the U.S. stock market, gapping higher a couple of days this week. And the earnings are coming out. And it's not just the banks. So I was looking at companies like Alcoa, where as a metals company, you could appreciate they have higher input costs, higher labor costs. And yet, they reported strong earnings. And how can they report strong earnings? Because that's the secret, is productivity is offsetting some of the increase in wages and labor costs. And so I think that we can't have it both ways. We can't say, well, wages are hurting companies by pushing up prices, and then when the companies report a strong or record earnings.
So what does that mean then for these markets? Because we have seen a lot of volatility just this quarter. It was almost too easy, I think, for investors over the last about 5 to 6 quarters. And now finally we're getting that volatility we were all waiting for. How does this carry over into markets first and foremost?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that you're right. You know, we've been correcting, say, drifting lower in the S&P 500 since early September. But I think that the gap higher openings this week, both yesterday and today, so that's Thursday and Friday, and putting the S&P basically back to the second half of last month's highs, my best guess right now is they're going to make new record highs in the major indexes. So give me the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ. I think those could be making new highs before the end of the year, despite the rising rates, despite the prospects of Fed tightening, despite the rise in oil prices. The U.S. economy seems fairly resilient still. And I think for me, the big test comes not right now, because there still is some stimulus left in the pipeline. And the Fed is still buying $120 billion worth of bonds every month. But as we get into next year, what concerns me is the doubling of the price of oil. Well, more than doubling now, but the past three business downturns in the U.S. came after oil prices doubled. And I'm not talking about last April when they were negative. I'm just thinking about, say, since the November U.S. election, prices have more than doubled. That's it. So for me, I'd say that the oil energy is different than other commodity price increases, because oil gets into everything. And when I mean everything, just think about pesticides and fertilizer and how much natural gas or oil these things use. So even our food is heavily vulnerable to oil price swings. I kind of think that the rise in oil is not so inflationary. What's going to happen is the higher price of oil is going to make us buy less other things. Discretionary spending is going to weaken. And I think this is why the Federal Reserve, like many other central banks, really view the rise of oil as a tax on consumers. You know, back in 2008, when oil was near $160 a barrel, the ECB hiked rates twice, just as the economy went for its deepest downturn since the Depression. It was, of course, before the pandemic. ECB raising rates because higher oil prices, and you know, they basically sent the block into a deflationary spiral for many years, which they're only barely getting out of now. Even though inflation looks elevated now, the ECB, like the Fed, like most other central banks, are saying that price increases likely to prove transitory, because it's primarily on the supply side, not the demand side. Demand, aggregate demand management, that's difficult. We have the tools for that. But how to respond to supply, that's a different story. And I think that's why the Fed thinks that businesses who see a profit opportunity will boost supply. Less of a problem than for policymakers.
Well, we'll see how it all plays out, right? Because the Fed is still, for the most part, sticking to that transitory narrative, although we have started to get some comments saying that inflation. I believe they've called it frustrating that it is staying up still at these general higher levels. That all ties into rate hike expectations and even taper expectations for the Fed. Seems like at the next meeting in November, they will be announcing the taper starting in December. At least that is almost the consensus right now. And the market just this week even moved forward the rate hike expectations, I believe, to September of next year. Mark, do you think all of this is reasonable? Do you think the Fed will be able to go through in that general timeline?
Well, I think that the market is even more aggressive, pricing in Fed tightening. I'll give you what I'm looking at. I know a lot of people are talking about September. I think it's priced into September, but here's what I'm looking at. The Fed gets done with their QE around the middle of the year. So the first meeting we should look at is the July FOMC meeting, July 2022. And given that, assuming that the Fed doesn't change anything, we should assume that the Fed funds average rate remains where it is now, 8 basis points. So if the Fed was going to stay on hold next July, after it gets done with QE, it waits a little bit, it holds off in July, fair value for that July Fed funds contract should be 8 basis points. It is trading at 23.5 basis points right now. That, if you look at these numbers as odds, that when I calculate it, it's about a 60% chance that the Fed hikes rates next July rather than in September. And to me, this shows how aggressive the market is pricing in central bank policy. Because remember, last month's FOMC meeting, only half of the Federal Reserve thought there'd be a rate hike would be appropriate in 2022. The other half did not. So despite that split kind of sentiment at the Fed, the market has gone a long way towards pricing in two hikes by the Fed. What concerns me is we've seen this in other countries like Canada. Back in May and June, the market was very aggressive about the Bank of Canada rate hikes. As the market scaled back that aggressiveness, the Canadian dollar weakened. Now, really, since the September 10th Bank of Canada meeting, the Canadian dollar has been the strongest currency, and those BAs, the banker acceptances, those three-month interest rate futures contracts have jumped about 30 basis points, telling me that the market is confident that with given the backdrop of the Fed, that the Bank of Canada can hike rates at the June meeting or shortly thereafter.
Do you think the market's gotten a little ahead of their skis then on this? Because, look, there are still a lot of question marks as to if that time frame is even reasonable, that September time frame, not even that July time frame. And, look, the markets have altered their expectations a lot recently. It ties in with the whole question is, will the Fed actually go through that much or that quick of a tightening process? And then on top of that, because the market's pricing this in so much more aggressively, does that lessen the chance of a taper tantrum for the markets?
Yeah, I think you're right. In fact, I think that the market has, it's just really through these verbal cues that investors have done a lot of the heavy lifting for the central banks. And I think we're going to see this more in the UK, for example, where the market's done a lot of heavy lifting. The market has been so emboldened by hawkish comments from the Bank of England that's pricing in about a 15 basis point rate hike before the end of the year. The Bank of England meets both in early November and then towards the middle of December. The market's pricing in a hike at one of those two meetings this year. And the ironic thing about it is that the Bank of England is still buying, they're still engaged in QE. They are still buying bonds. And the Bank of England governor said that he's prepared to raise rates even if they're still buying bonds. And what's striking about that is when Powell was asked that explicitly at his press conference following the September FOMC meeting, he sort of shrugged it off, thinking that it was contradictory. When a reporter asked him, he's like, by buying bonds, you're stimulating, you're adding liquidity. And by raising interest rates, you're taking liquidity out. So he said he would not do that. That in the U.S., the sequence of events is you get done with the bond buying and then you raise rates. But the Bank of England has taken a different tact on this. And I think that we're going to find that both central banks, that when they do move, when they do something, that they try to calm the markets down. So when the Fed begins tapering, for example, it'll be very clear that the criteria for tapering is much easier or lower. The bar is much lower than for the actual rate hike. And what concerns me is that fiscal policy, less stimulative, monetary policy, less stimulative, probably because of what the market is already doing for the Fed. And as you mentioned, we've got this jump in oil prices, which I say slows down the economy. And we've got like this pent-up consumer demand. We did get a strong retail sales report today, but it's hard to separate the retail sales. It's a nominal number, so it's hard to separate the prices from quantities. And so I'm concerned that, last month, Americans lost about a $300 a week unemployment compensation program from the federal government. The evaporation, the end of that program is going to also suck shopping ability, suck household money, the money that would be used for shopping and for buying things. It's not going to be there. So we're going to see personal income get hit a bit, and that's going to also be a weight on consumption. So I'm concerned that the market is getting ahead of itself, and that as it adjusts, the currencies could be vulnerable.
Let's talk about currencies then, because the U.S. dollar was on a run, and it's not exactly screaming higher to the sense that, again, it reached right around, let's say, 94.50 on the dollar index, reversed a little bit near the tail end of the week, so it's nowhere near that $100 or 100 level on the dollar index, but what do you think then for the dollar? It sounds like if the markets are getting a little ahead of themselves, then the dollar could be under some pressure here coming up.
Yeah, no, I think it might be a little bit early. And so I think the question, that traders have to ask really is what kind of market we're in, a trending market or a sideways market? And so I think that right now, like the dollar index is in a broadly sideways market. Roughly, that would be the recent lows around 93.70. And we did make a marginal new high this week of about 94.60, 94.55, something like that. So I think that we're sort of stuck in a range for a little bit. We don't get a lot of key economic data next week from the U.S. Globally, we'll get the PMIs, the flash PMIs. For Canada, the U.K., and Japan, we'll also get CPI measures. But for the numbers that drive the dollar and the Fed, we're not going to really get those. And so that's why I'm kind of thinking that broad consolidation. Most of the people I talk to are still dollar bulls. I mean, so I have to press against them and explain about why I'm concerned about getting too far ahead on Fed tightening, why the economy is going to slow. And the other one that is beginning to, I think, become more of a factor, there's talk this week that President Xi of China and President Biden are going to have a virtual summit. So what does a virtual summit mean? I think it's a WebEx. So they fancy it up and call it a virtual summit. But if I was in Beijing and I am looking at the United States right now, if I'm in Europe, or even if I'm in Ottawa trying to have to negotiate with the U.S., what am I looking at? I'm thinking that I look at Predictit, the website, predictit.org, where you can see how people are betting on political outcomes. And the market, that market is saying that most likely the Democrats are going to lose both houses of Congress in next November's election. So if I'm going to try to talk with and negotiate with Biden, how much credibility, how much should I do that? It looks like he could be a lame duck in a year's time. And that brings the U.S. is, what are we then? One presidential election away from pulling out of the Paris Accord or pulling out of NATO or doing something else like that. And that's why I think is another like headwind coming for us.
Wow, that doesn't sound all that bullish, but hey, it puts another, I guess, chip in the bears category there. But next year is definitely going to be interesting, and even the tail end of this year, to see if the Fed starts their taper process and if there is a bit of a taper tantrum. Again, they've been talking the market in that direction for months now, and the market is even pricing it in or starting to price it in. We'll see if it truly has priced a taper in when that starts to happen. But look, it sounds like there are just, again, a lot of cross currents and a lot to understand about inflation, that it may remain elevated, but it's about the direction of inflation. And recently that has been coming back a little bit. Could be what's pushed down some of the metals. But again, we did see a nice bounce in the metals broadly this week. Mark, great chatting with you as always, buddy. Again, I'll post a link to your website and we'll chat again next week. Have a great weekend there, Mark.
Thanks. Good luck, everybody.